My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, our series about the Vince Gilliverse of shows, including Better Call Saul, this show.
This show and this episode, we're talking about Expenses, an episode that was directed and written by Thomas Schnauz, and it originally aired on May the 22nd of 2017.
Yeah, in this episode, Jimmy is driven to desperation. He has mounting expenses. He's trying to keep the law office intact while not practicing law. Mm-hmm. His ad business is struggling, and his personality starts becoming darker because of, you know, pressures and irritations. Like, there are people who are consistently being a dick to him this episode and next episode. And this is, you know, he's not at his most graceful.
He's getting kicked a lot.
Yep. And it's, you know, again, it's his responsibility to deal with being kicked, but this is a bad time for him to be kicked.
Yes. Yeah. Kim gets foregrounded a little bit more here. We see her processing some guilt about what she helped do to Chuck.
Yeah.
And the growing rift between her and Jimmy because of it.
Yeah, they're starting to go again because they don't talk.
Yeah, they don't talk.
Nacho's plan to murder Hector by switching out the pills kind of evolves. We get Daniel Wormald Price, Daniel Price Wormald back. Real nice to get him back.
Yeah.
Going to be, you know, setting up for his final appearances.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah. I need a Price spinoff show so bad.
And the Price is Right. and it's just about baseball card prices. It's him evaluating doing Antiques Roadshow for different baseball cards. Would I watch that? Fuck Huell's rules. Give me the Price is Right.
Yep.
The writers talk about that, you know, they love Price. They treat him like a Breaking Bad fan who thinks he can be Heisenberg. Mm-hmm. That was more true earlier when he was doing more crime stuff. He's a little bit more put off by it.
Yeah, he's been hit. Yeah. He's been kicked and he doesn't want to do with it anymore. Yeah. He's working with Nacho, and you know, it's funny because as much as Nacho gets, you know, he's gotten Michael Mando has gotten a lot of billing. Throughout the entire season, going back on rewatch, it is a little shocking how little he features.
Like the first half of the series.
Yes.
Specifically. Yeah.
Room has been made, to kind of like bring him here, and we actually get some development.
And it's a, Vince Gilligan hallmark of casting an actor for a minor part, realizing that you have gold and then expanding their part. Mm-hmm. Famously happened with Jesse. It happens in the series with both Kim and Nacho, Michael Mando and Ray Seahorn. And just realizing, like, oh, these are really good performers. What if we did something more with their characters?
Right.
You know, and when we started watching this again, and I was also feeling like, where's all the Nacho? Is because I had all these warm feelings about Nacho from the end of the series, the second half.
Yeah.
Where like Nacho is a fucking king. Mm-hmm. Love Nacho's character.
Yeah. They want to kind of contrast him with Tuco. Like, he is meticulous. He is, you know, like compromised, but still morally upright. Like, he wants to protect his dad. And he is very much the opposite of Tuco, even though he's in the Tuco chair.
Yeah. Would want to protect his dad, also wouldn't beat the shit out of, you know, Crazy Eight.
Yeah.
Like, he's, you know, lots of things. He's immoral. He's in the game. He stole baseball cards. But he's not malicious. He's not, you know, cruel.
Destructive, right?
Yeah. No other real production trivia, so we're going to get going here. We start out with a cold open with Jimmy reporting for community service. Mm-hmm. He's lining up under an overpass. This is very specifically trying to look like a police lineup visually. Yeah. As they do this, this is foreshadowing. Yeah. And he gets on the thing, the parks official, who ends up working for the exterminator, ends up working for Jack's guys later.
Wait, does he? No, I think he just looks like those guys. That's not Ira.
Oh, wait, that's not Ira. Looks like Ira. I thought this guy showed up somewhere later because he's the guy who... This guy shows up in Crimes later, right? I might be thinking something wrong.
I need to look. I didn't check the wiki. I think it's just another haggard-looking, redheaded guy.
Okay.
Specifically, it's Jack's uncle. Or sorry, it's the owner of Vomino's Pest is Ira, who gets involved with stealing the Hummel at the beginning of season four.
Yeah. My bad. Yep. Just another guy who looks like that guy.
All redheads look the same. It's fine.
That is 100% true.
Yeah.
The park's official will not let him read the contract. Mm-hmm. You know, it's boilerplate. Jimmy's on the other side of this kind of shit.
Yeah.
And he picks up his litter. He's doing a good job, but he answers a phone call about a commercial lead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, computer repair, that's the perfect business to advertise on television because computers are our future. and he's we're kind of cut between him trying to upsell them. You know, he wants to do all seven at once. He wants to be done with this.
Yeah.
To break even and getting interrupted by the fact that he's doing this while picking up litter on the highway.
You know, cut to later, like he's moved on to a different errand. He is on the phone with the insurance company trying to get a refund for his malpractice insurance premiums. And they keep running him into walls.
Yep. Shift ends. The parks guy gives him credit for 30 minutes. For this, instead of the 4 hours. And he's like, I picked up more trash than anyone here.
Yeah.
He's like, listen, you know, you can't be on your phone. No cell phones in prison. You know, this is a stand-in for jail time. There are lots of cell phones in prison. And Jimmy tries to give a speech, tries to get everyone on his side about this, which I love this. You know, just, we're not going to stand for it, are we, guys? Like, yay. You know, it's
just, who keeps saying that?
It's great.
And I love the guy with mega puberty.
Yeah, he's drink the Cinco puberty juice. Just take some of your friend's pubes and put it in the shake.
Dude, are you gonna get in the van or what?
Yeah, I'm gonna push my mushroom house through that forest of pubes. Maybe some tight sliz. And Jimmy starts bargaining, starts doing Jimmy stuff. You know, says, you know, I can, you got to be able to do better in 30 minutes. He goes, well, we could make it zero. This is somebody with a very small amount of power. Flexing it. This is an annoying thing that happens in real life.
Yeah.
You know, and we're going to see Jimmy quote these lines back again. Secret to characterization of the Vince Gilliverse. Mm-hmm. Watch what somebody does to somebody that hurts them and then watch them do the same thing to somebody else.
Yes.
That is all of the lattice of characterization in the series.
Yeah. Again, we see Jimmy chafing under rules that have nothing to do with the result.
Results. Yeah. Exactly. Like Jimmy's right. In terms of a punishment, like, yes, he should not be able to use his phone. In terms of what actually gets done for the community, he did do it really well.
Yeah.
And one of those things matters more to Jimmy and to Gary than does to, you know, the world. At large, like the system, the world is a system of rules that do feel arbitrary and stupid.
Yeah. And here you have this high and mighty prick, swinging around and, you know, hurting people because he wants to be able to inflict those rules.
I always get mad if somebody who makes pizza for me isn't high or isn't allowed to be high.
Yeah.
Like you're making a fucking pizza. It's like, you know, it's a shitty, tedious job. Yeah. You can 100% fucking do it while high. Like, you know, I remember having friends getting fired from pizza jobs, you know, for like getting drug tested. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
It's, if there's going to be a job where you can be high, that's the job.
It's so low stakes, like for making it. I don't know about a delivery driver driving super high, maybe just high enough to be careful.
Sure. I mean, making it in the restaurant, like delivery driver, you know, possibly another thing. But like, I get my pizza fucked up, and nobody's high. They have a drug test. It's like that Flight of the Conchord things where it's like, you know, they got little slaves making sneakers to make sneakers cheaper, but I keep buying sneakers, and they ain't that much cheaper. You know, it's like that. Like whatever this rule was, didn't actually help me at all.
Yeah,
like the trickle down effects never helped this injustice.
It is I don't know, that's one of the reasons why I hate that we don't have these out here, you know, but like back home, one of the reasons I like shopping at Aldi is that it's the only grocery store that I've seen where the checkout stand has stools for the checker. You are just, you're not just allowed to sit, they provide it and you're expected to.
And you know, as somebody like, who has checking stuff, like that would have been a godsend.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like, oh, time to lean, time to clean. Fuck that.
Yeah,
fuck
it's America. Really stupid.
Yeah.
It's really dumb. My friend's dad, who hired me and my friend to put up insulation in his garage at like $4 an hour or something. And then when we were listening to him give instructions, if we had our hands in our pockets, he'd be like, take your hands out of your pockets. They belong to me this afternoon.
Jesus.
Which is like really menacing thing to say to children. Yeah. But also, as I'm an adult, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, good God, I should have hit you. The van gets back to the parking lot and Jimmy is burning, you know, both ends. He rushes to his car to give himself a horse bath with a wet wipe, changes clothes. But his car is struggling to start. It barely starts, is foreshadowing. He rushes to get to a commercial shoot for a recliner salesman.
Yeah.
And he mentions, this guy's very funny and again, very Tim and Eric. And I love local ads, you know, getting into Twitter shit. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, this is good, but let's see, I have it again. Like, talk to the camera like it's your friend. Mm-hmm. You know, do you have a friend? I have my friend Ron. Like, you know, talk about Ron, and he just says it exactly the same.
Yeah. Like, he even stumbles on the last line. It's like, perfect. It was good. It was better than good.
Yeah, we just got to go. You know, Jimmy says, hey, you should strike while the iron's hot and make more commercials. We can do it right now. Mm-hmm. And he's like, my wife didn't even want me to do this one. You know, and Jimmy's trying to upsell him. He's, you know, can you do it on credit? And he's like, I can't.
Yeah.
You know, and he goes to the crew, and the crew, the cameraman starts, he says, why don't we just split it even? Mm-hmm. And he's like, what do they teach you about capitalism in your stupid school? Like, look at this. He like lays out all his expenses. He's like, I'm just getting 100 back from this.
Yeah.
After he gives everyone his money. That night, Jim and Kimmy are going through receipts.
Yeah.
You know, how much she's paid into and how much he still owes.
Yes. And he hands over money from a fat envelope. You know, it's like, oh, you know, ad business, that must be going well. It's TV, how could there not be profit?
Yeah, very funny.
Yeah.
And she's like, you didn't drain your bank account, did you? And he says no. And this is, you know, he's lying. They need to talk.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to keep up this appearance, because again, if he doesn't have this law office with Kim, what's he got? This was the brass ring. He was there. You know, delivery guy shows up with Chinese food, and Jimmy gives him $25 on a $24 order and says, keep the change. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're only tipping me a dollar? He goes, we can make it zero. Again, world treats Jimmy like shit. People, you know, Jimmy treats them more like shit.
Yeah.
And people just generally do that in fiction.
Yep. So we get Daniel. He's returning home. He's learned, kind of. He has installed a bunch of deadbolts on his front door. He disarms an alarm for his house. And I love the way this is shot. Like, from the inside of the living room, we can see like a hand on the couch with a watch on it.
Yeah.
Like, he opens the door and turns on the lights. Not just there. And Daniel freaks out.
I would as well.
Yeah, yeah. Unexpected, like, dude? No.
Yeah. Just a dude who also, you know, has been pretty threatening historically.
Yeah.
To you. So, you know, Nacho says, relax, I'm just here to talk. Yeah, I got business. And he, like, business that code for, like, stealing my baseball cards. He's holding such a grudge.
Yep.
This is really cute.
Yeah. Well, he did have to sit in pie.
He did have to sit in. You know what? That was a big thing. And he had to give up his supercar.
Yeah.
Nacho shows him a pill. You know, Hector dropped. And he says, you know, can you steal these for me? Danny goes, why? These are just normal pills. Why don't you go to the doctor and get a prescription? Mm-hmm. He says, you know, I need them to be empty capsules before they're sealed.
Yes.
And Daniel, you know, thinks about how he can do it. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't do it. But he's like, what's the point? You know, and furthermore, what'll happen if I can't do it? Are you going to come and steal more of my stuff?
Yeah.
And Nacho is just trying to explain, like, this is the carrot, not the stick.
Yeah.
You know, if you do this, I'm going to give you $20,000.
The same price that he got for all those oxys, right?
Yes. You know, and it's going to be for empty pills.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the price for being an accessory to attempted murder.
Yeah.
Is what he's doing here.
Yeah. And, you know, Price does not understand. He's just, like, thinking about it.
Yeah.
Know? Not to leave through the patio which he came through.
Yeah. It was unlocked.
We cut over to, well, no, he had to cut the alarm system. He talks about it later. Mike talks about it.
But the door, the door was not protected. He still had a glass patio door back there.
Mike checks on the cash in his closet, stash, and then goes to playground duty to lay concrete.
Yeah. He paid for all the materials out of his cash. That's a way he can spend it.
Yeah. Some volunteers pop over as Stacy's on her way to go, like, do whatever Stacy does.
I feel for Mike here. Like, I'm doing a task and then somebody's like, how can I help? And it's like, I know that I should. I know that I should, but managing is going to be so hard.
Well, and it's just, sometimes there's not really a way to help.
Yeah. Yeah.
He tries to say this, but it's hard for people to care. And it's one of these things where you learn, like, sometimes letting somebody help is something you do for them. It's not something they're doing for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, hey, this is a donation. So he directs two of them to mix up some concrete. And there's a woman, woman that we've seen in the support group, Anita, asks what she can do. And Mike says, you know, everything's covered. And she picks up a trowel to do what Mike is doing.
And he goes, no, you're better off with this, and hands her a broom, which is offensive. And she goes, no, this creates a texture.
Yeah.
So kids don't slip in the rain. Mm-hmm. You know, he thanks her for her help, and she thanks him for not trying to do everything by himself.
Yeah.
She is conservatively half his age, at least in terms of looks. Mm-hmm. Much prefer him with the snowplow lady at the waitress at the diner. She looks significantly younger. She's old enough to have be a widow and everything. Like, she's not young, but she looks so much younger than
Mike. Yeah. I mean, and we're talking like the difference in like probably early 50s to late 70s.
Yeah, right? Late 70s at least.
Yeah.
And you know, looks older. Mm-hmm. Like Mike's got an old look to him.
Lived harder. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike goes to the parking lot. And he asked the other guy to cover for him for a second because Daniel's sitting in a car playing a baseball game on a Game Boy Advance.
Yep.
Go, Daniel.
King. This your idea of stealth?
Yeah. And he's like, I want to hire you, you know, because I don't want to make the same mistake.
Is that W.C. Fields?
He's here. Cha-cha-cha. Play it again, Sam. And, you know, he doesn't want to make the same mistake. And Mike says, then don't get involved again.
Yeah.
I love this passive shit.
Yeah, but I'm involved already.
You know, and Mike listens once he mentions Nacho.
Yes.
You know, and he's just like, I was kind of surprised he got past my security system. And Mike's like, you just had to disconnect the phone line.
Yeah.
Not a thing.
Yeah. Like, oh, you think you're protected? Like, literally everything you can do just keeps honest people honest or creates a little bit of a delay.
Yeah. Anyone's motivated enough. Daniel kind of explains what's happening. And I would think at this point, once Mike kind of figured it out here, mm-hmm. he might be like, okay, maybe I'm in because I can figure out what he's going to do. That doesn't happen quite yet.
No,
he says, Daniel, you should find a way out of it.
Yeah.
You know? Kim pulls up to Mesa Verde, sets a sad 5-minute alarm on her phone to take a nap.
Yeah.
Scary as shit. Like, hell. She goes inside and Paige is just like, hey, you know, you told me not to worry about this thing with Chuck, but I read the transcripts, you know, due diligence. Mm-hmm. You just absolutely disassembled that man.
Yeah. Can you believe how pompous he was? Like, oh, this chicanery.
The Magna Carta. Yeah. You know, sunroof.
Yeah. You know, and engaging in some, you know, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
Right?
Get a load of this guy. Which, again, I cannot stress enough, is true.
Yeah.
You know, they're going through the paperwork, and there's a disagreement about the loan to deposit ratio in Utah. Mm-hmm. And Paige's like, this has to be wrong. And Kim's, you know, already said, like, no, they're different in Utah.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be the same as in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, gets kind of short with Paige, you know, picks up a big binder, you know, drops it on the table and says, okay,
real short. Like, she drops it like with a thud. Like, you can read them if you want.
Uh-huh.
You know, like...
Doing what Chuck did, like, even if she's right, it is exactly what he did, insisting in the face of it.
Yeah. And it's also what Jimmy's doing of getting overworked and super stressed and then sublimating it, taking it out on other people.
Yeah.
Paige tries to move on and Kim apologizes. You know, that was very unprofessional. Paige says, no, I've moved past it. We all know you're working really hard. Mm-hmm. And then Kim says, as far as I'm concerned, all we did was tear down a sick man.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. Chuck's fine. He's well on his way to being fine now.
she doesn't know that.
No, she doesn't know that. She thinks he's still cowering in the thing. But if she waited a little bit or checked or asked anybody, you know, like, she's just assuming, like, oh no, poor Chuck. And it's so weird to me. Again, I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, and again, they also did not say anything in that is not, like, they did that trick.
Yeah.
But they didn't say anything that wasn't true.
They did bring in Rebecca. I think that she is really wrapped around the axle on Rebecca.
Yeah. Again, and that sucks. Not defending that individual part, but tearing down a sick man. She could say all we did was, you know, take advantage of this innocent woman. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, like, he's not just a sick man. They didn't tear him down. Like, he does hate Jimmy, and that's why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And his thing was psychosomatic. Like, all these things are true. He should not have been hiding it from his firm. And she says as much later.
Yeah.
Like, she's obviously conflicted. She's feeling two things at once. But I want... Yeah.
It's this you know, guilt can be irrational, and that feeling is coming out in an imprecise way. Yeah. It feels like.
I would like the just angels of her nature to have more voice, I guess.
Yeah.
So we get to Jimmy getting back from another community service shift, and this time he's absolutely covered in filth.
Yeah.
You know, washes up really quick, speeds to meet the AV teens, loads up with the Suzuki. They all barely fit. Car won't start. And they all start giving car advice, which is infuriating.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think you're flooding it. You're overcranking it.
You're definitely flooding, cranking it. It's very turn the middle side top wise.
Yeah. Yeah. And also an echo of, you know, 4 days out.
Yes. Right? Yeah, much so.
Huge memories of going on shoots in my like lighting and film classes, loading up my shitty little Saturn with all of the equipment.
And rolling down the window for the boom mic is a really nice touch.
Yeah, play a little Flintstones car action.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. Cute. They end up taking the bus. They get there and this is a music store. Mm-hmm. Jimmy looks at this white Stratocaster signed by Ricky Blackmore, the guitarist from Deep Purple. And the camera people are like, nobody cares about that shit. Phil's like, oh yeah, the guy who did Another Brick in the Wall. But then Sherry comes over and says, we have a problem. It's them. And it's the Sklar brothers.
Hey!
Some of my most, like, I generally well wish them never was. Crossed over. They're good.
The Sklar brothers from the Oblongs?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the twins who show up in things to be non-creepy twins.
Uh-huh. To finish each other's
sandwiches.
Yep.
Very funny men.
Uh-huh.
You know? But they're having second thoughts. They're like, this is not enough return. And they start poking holes in Jimmy's scheme, and they're going to go away. I like how there's good Sklar brother, bad Sklar brother as well. There's like one who's a little meaner. Uh-huh. They turn away, and Jimmy goes, free.
Or no, you know, no,
first 50% off. Yeah.
First 50% off. And like, And it's like, okay, free. And be like, oh God, it's like the words turn to ash in Jimmy's mouth, but just like, okay, like I need you to understand what good this ad will do.
And he's right. Mm-hmm. You know, that they're wrong. Like he will, you know, and then we'll do the rest for the original cost once you see what happens.
Yeah.
They have nothing to lose. They agree.
Bad on Jimmy for not making them sign a contract.
True. Exactly. Jimmy pays the EV teens out of his own pocket, and Sherry tries to give the money back. Mm. And he's like nearly in tears. He's like, no, you earned that. Like, I can't, you know, this is hard.
But you're suffering.
You're losing money, you know? Yeah. Like, well, you will see. It'll be fine. You know, he's telling himself that as much as her.
Yeah. And just like, you know, he needs to sit in the parking lot and just contemplate for a while. Yeah,
he's not going to take the same bus.
Yeah.
Back.
Yeah.
So we cut into the grief support group here. Anita is telling her story. She took her deceased husband's clothes to Goodwill. You know, she cried, but it felt good. But she kept his uniform because she'd never let that go, and nobody needs it. And Mike is watching intently.
Yeah.
You know,
people can use the other clothes, you know, but what use would anyone have for his
Jimmy
old
will
uniform?
Dress a veteran in it and make 1,000 commercials. Uh-huh. So joke's on you.
Joke is on you. And after the meeting, Mike talks to her because, you know, he hears about a uniform and he assumes cop, right? Yep. Asks how long was he on the job? And like, no, he was retired from the Navy. And she's like, I forget that not everybody's heard the story. What happened to him was he liked hiking. He went out to, I think it was Gila National Park, and went missing. No trace. You know, his car was there, but we have no idea of, like, he ran across somebody, if he slipped and fell, if he got lost. Yeah.
Scary.
You know, like, I don't even know where he is, you know?
A real thing that can and will happen.
Yes. And like that not knowing it, like, you know, she wants to pretend it doesn't matter, but it does, right? Like, there's uncertainty about the last moments, and there was nothing to bury.
Yep. A bad, you know, I get that. You know, that is rough. That is very harrowing. I wanted to get your take on the causality between these scenes, the juxtaposition, because immediately Mike goes outside, calls Daniel to ask if he's made a deal yet, and says he's in.
He doesn't want Daniel to disappear without a trace because he knows that happens.
Maybe. Maybe he's worried about Daniel. He doesn't seem to care about Daniel very much. And when we get here, like when you get to that scene, when I try to think of reasons these two things could be connected, this is going to happen slightly before he starts talking about money laundering.
Yeah.
Like maybe he's like, I would like to take care of this person as well and I can't spend my money.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not needing for money.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Your take on it is fine. I feel like he should be more concerned about Daniel if that were the case. Mm-hmm. You know, Daniel is not in the deal yet, and he could say, like, listen, don't do this.
Yeah.
I'll talk to Nacho.
He's concerned enough to tell him to like get away. That should be good enough, but he knows that Daniel's too stupid to protect himself. Yeah. Right. And so he's decided about this. I think that
but he lets him go through with it. He's mm-hmm. just going to be there, but he doesn't say like, I mean, the thing, if he wanted Daniel not to be into it, he'd be like, don't do it. And then he'd call Varga.
Yeah.
You know, and be like, what is this about? There's another way to do this. Don't get this civilian involved. Mm-hmm. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. I don't like this juxtaposition of these two scenes. If there's mm-hmm. something I'm missing that is more clear than that, I would like to know it.
Yeah. Yeah. But regardless, he's in. Right. Yeah. The deal hasn't happened yet. I also get the sense he's doing this to learn more.
Yeah. Because
Nacho's involved. He knows that Gus is out there. Like he could also be afraid that Nacho is gonna disappear without a trace and his dad's not gonna know.
Yeah, possible for he could be worried about Nacho with this, but also he left it pretty definitively last time. Yeah. It feels like the scene that should have preceded this, it should have been something that made him connect the dots about what's happening with Hector.
Yeah.
Or that, we just don't see those dots connecting, and that's fine. I don't mind ambiguity, but we see other dots connecting instead.
Yeah.
It's placed very intentionally mm-hmm. next to this scene.
Yeah.
They could have put it after the next one mm-hmm. or put it somewhere else and it would have been.
I think Mike needs to talk about 5% more.
Yeah. Now talk about 5% more, and just usually the show is really good about juxtaposing images like that to show a direct relation. And I just, I'm missing it. It could just be me being a dumb, though. I'm not, saying it's not there. I'd be like, interested to hearing listeners if they have idea on that.
Yeah.
Comment or write in or talk in the Discord or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jimmy and Kim are out by the glass ball again, having a smoke. And he says like, hey, we should go to a bar. And she initially refuses. She has so much work to do, but she relents and they go out to a bar, and they're playing their game. They're scoping out, potential marks. And Jimmy is maxing out credit cards. He says, hey, start charging this one instead of that one. Never a good,
sign. To do that.
Yeah.
But also needs a drink. I get it, and mm-hmm. needs what he's doing here is he needs a taste of what he is pushing for right now.
Yeah.
Like this is the other half of dream life other than mm-hmm. working out of the office. He can no longer work out of the office with Kim.
Yeah.
He's not doing that now. Even though I did have the thought that when he was taking calls on the side of the highway, it seems mm-hmm. like perfectly good Francesca work.
Yeah.
To me, she's not really doing anything for Kim. Mm-hmm. But the, just hire her on as a part, Saul Goodman Productions instead. Mm-hmm. He wants to remind himself what this is for.
Yeah.
They focus on this guy who's waving money around about making bets. And Kim says, we could say we're waiting for a celebrity. And Jimmy goes, I'll be Kevin Costner. And she's very skeptical of this. I did not need this joke twice, but it's still cute. And I looked at two of them next to each other and they do kind of look the same.
Yeah.
They turn to this guy, though, who is abusing a waiter mm-hmm. in a comical way.
Yeah.
You call this a martini? It's swill. What are you, like, service level?
I ordered a dirty martini and you must be mistaken because you brought me a glass of vomit. Like
a glass of vomit. Good Lord, man. It's olive juice and and vermouth and gin.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's all those things do kind of taste like vomit, but not because of any way you can make them, really.
Yeah, yeah.
You just have bad taste in drinks, brother.
he's being a real heel. And like Jimmy gets real serious, looking at him, kind of proposing this as violence or justice, right?
Yeah. Like, no, we got to get this guy. He has a very elaborate plan.
Yeah. It's like, all right, so we're going to sell him a worthless credit card, these credit cards that I'm not maxing out. And he's going to buy it for $5,000. I'm going to act like a drunk loser. He's going to think that he can take you away from me. And you will say,
you're playing me.
You're playing me and you're going to run off with the $5,000 together, right?
Yep. And he wants to do this.
Yeah.
Very badly, close to the end of his rope. Mm-hmm. $5,000 would do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
At this point,
$5,000 would do a lot for like 90% of the population.
Very much so. Specifically, it's really close to his total for the commercials.
Yes.
That he's on the wash and everything. And Kim goes, we're just talking, right? Like we just do this for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really put off by this.
Yeah.
This is a side of him that she doesn't see that often. Like, this is a dark side.
Yeah.
you know? And then she says, I've just been thinking about it, if there's another way to handle Chuck.
Yeah. Like, if we could have done it any differently. I think that she's, you know, sensing something here. Jimmy is not processing, what's happening. This is going to get worse after Chuck dies, but it's like, all right, like, if I'm feeling this, you have to be feeling this too.
Yeah.
They should talk about it. 100%. We probably should. Yeah.
Like, as much as I am, I'm not team Chuck in this. I 100% think that, like, I don't know, this is therapy is good, mm-hmm. you know? And you know, the joke has always been, would rather do anything in therapy. Kim should probably be in therapy during all this too. Kim doesn't talk about her stuff. Everyone in the series needs to be in therapy. That guy who ran over his daughter needs to be working around the clock.
Yep.
On this entire cast. If he's not too busy killing his daughters.
Like, not again.
Yeah. Well, the third time's a charm. Like,
Jimmy shuts her down though, saying, you know, like, hey, everything that happened to Chuck was his own fault. You know, you don't think about him anymore. I don't think about him anymore. Like, he's, you know, pressing back on her really hard.
Yeah, let's stop this, you know. And she pauses and she goes, okay, you know, she points out another mark to keep playing their game and proposes his land investment scam. And Jimmy's just not into it at this point. Again, clearly has stuff he needs to be processing.
Yeah.
Nacho shows up for the deal with Price and is surprised to find Mike with him. Mm-hmm. And Mike comes up, and this is the part, you know, where he mostly seems concerned with the plan. He's not concerned with anything else.
Yeah.
Again, I just didn't see these wheels spin. He's like, I need to know the plan. You know, I figured out what you're going to do. These are fake nitro pills for Hector. You know, we know he has a heart problem. What's your plan?
Yeah. You know, and not just plan, switch the pills from Hector's coat pocket. That's where he keeps them. And Mike starts pressure testing him, you know, like, okay, well, how are you going to make sure nobody suspects you? And Nacho doesn't answer that. He's just like, hey, I don't have a choice here. I need to do this. You know, Hector wants to use my dad's business, and my dad's going to get himself killed.
Yeah. You know, he says, you don't think I know who I'm dealing with. And Mike goes, no, I don't. Goes over and very slowly checks the gas cap and doesn't find anything in it and never explains it.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Can you imagine me Nacho and be like, what the fuck are you doing, man? And he just puts it back, like, all right.
He says it in mob speak, right? Like, hey, you know, like, yeah, you know, you think that you only have Hector and the Salamancas and the greater mob to worry about here. You know, Mike says, like, no, you actually don't.
Yes.
You don't know that there's an, you know, that there's another person. He could just explain, like, Gus wants to keep him alive. You know, like, by approaching, by harming Hector, you're going to bring Gus down on you.
Yeah, and he just says it very vaguely. If anybody gets a whiff, you know, there are more people out there. If anyone gets a whiff that you switch the pills, switch them back. People are going to look at them, you know? And he was not planning on doing this.
Yeah.
But this is good. This is Leo. This is good advice.
Yeah.
Before he lets the deal go down, he says he needs one more thing from Nacho and takes out a notebook. Yeah.
That could also be part of why he talked to, you know, got to Price. Mm-hmm. You know, after finding out, because, like, he does not want, you know, the driver who was killed that he feels a tremendous amount of guilt over, you know, disappear without a trace. Like,
he needs to
make sure that, you know, his family gets closure, I think.
Yeah.
Just as part of his general guilt tour. And that's something I forgot when we were talking about it earlier.
It makes sense for him to go out there and do the Samaritan dig.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's weird that he can talk to Nacho.
Yeah.
You know, without Price being involved and keep Price out of it and stuff if you want to. And I think that there's a level that he wants this bad thing to happen to Hector Salamanca, but he never acts as if that is true. You know, again, not an end of the world thing. It just feels slightly less direct. More externality for Mike would help.
Yes.
And then we get this end scene here, which is a nice, difficult scene to watch, even though very funny. Jimmy's meeting with a woman from the malpractice insurance company. Talk about premiums. Yeah. He says it's McGill. She thinks he's Chuck at first.
Yeah.
And he doesn't explain his suspension, but he says, hey, I should get a refund. You're not going to be practicing a lawyer. That's only fair.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm not going to use it. And she says, well, this technically is still, you know, like, we can't turn insurance off and on. That's not how it works.
Yes.
Also, this protects you in case your clients sue. And Jimmy says, no, they won't sue.
My clients would never do that. Mm-hmm. She goes, well, listen, you know, not only can we not do this, but once it goes up, your premiums are going to go up considerably.
Yeah. Once you're back, you know, you're going to have to pay more for insurance because you were suspended. It's like getting into a car wreck.
Yeah. And he starts crying. And I think this is one of the things I really like about the scene is that this is tactical because he's furious. Mm-hmm. He's also letting something out.
Yeah,
that is real.
The initial reaction, the initial surge is real. You can kind of almost see him coming up with a plan in real time. Yeah. Like, you know, just to, like he starts, you know, he's crying and then, you know, she expresses concern. And like when he starts talking, he, you can see that he's working towards something.
He starts saying real things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been doing this community service. You know, I keep getting ripped off on it. My car is broken. My gal is disappointed in me. Like, those are all true things.
Yeah.
Like, he says in a weird old, my gal, you know, it's Jimmy folksy charm speak.
Yeah.
But he's externalizing and vocalizing things that are true, that have clearly been bothering him.
Yeah. And this is echoed, like, fuck, in season 6.
Yes. Right?
When he's talking to Jerry.
Yeah. You know, and then he also rolls up a little bit of revenge. Like, on a certain point, you know, Chuck did this horrible thing to him.
Mm-hmm.
He managed to dodge the worst of it, but now he's dealing with he's taking his hell in installments.
Yeah.
And this is also a thing that he blames Chuck for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Chuck manipulated him, did this whole thing. He's mm-hmm. the reason there was a trial.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
All over who got Mesa Verde.
Yeah. You know, and my brother's sick and he's alone. He hates me.
Yeah. And again, real, I think there's some real emotion.
Yeah.
Behind this. Like, mm-hmm. it's both. It's double speak. Like, he is doing it to hurt Chuck, but I think, you know, this is real.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, my brother hates me. And she goes, oh, this is your brother, Charles. And this is, I think, where the moment where the plan comes in.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit. And this is funny to me. He's mentally ill. He's holed up in the house, no electricity. He's working by lanterns. He's making up numbers. He had a breakdown in court. She goes, he has a breakdown in court?
It's in the transcript.
I fucking clap and hoot and holler. Very funny.
Yeah. And she grabs a notepad, sees her writing something down. I'm like, no, please don't. Please don't.
This wasn't for writing down.
Yeah. I just don't want him to get him in trouble with you guys because of me. You're not going to do anything, are you? Just, I wouldn't worry about it, Mr. Yeah. McGill.
Fucking insurance. Please feel better. And as he leaves, he looks furious. Like he's done something, you know, that'll get the whole little fucking SOB.
Yeah.
You know, he's really mad. The sadness was real. This anger is real.
Yeah.
Like, Jimmy does not have healthy outlets for negative emotions.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And this is going to ultimately lead to the birth of the band The Prodigy.
Oh.
the Twisted Firestarter.
Yeah. He's walking out. Like, he looks triumphant, but also just like,
he's fucking A. Like, he's so mad during this. Like, you know, and I don't know. Again, it all makes sense. I get it. It's a shitty thing to do. Chuck's reaction is also shitty.
Yeah. It tracks. You know, it tracks for like why, you know, I understand that, you know, he's saying like, all right, well, if Chuck didn't want me to be a lawyer, if he's, you know, making it harder for me to be a lawyer, we might as well even things out. where I start getting a little bit more like, oh yeah, this is like this is not forgivable, or why this feels different, I guess. Mm-hmm. Why this feels different to me than what happens in Chicanery, why it feels like it's a little bit more over the line than that, is that he has nothing to gain by doing this other than the, you know.
This is pure malice.
Yeah, this is pure, you know, revenge, right? Like, he gets to practice, right? He takes a setback, but like, Chicanery, you know, should have been even. I've got nothing to do with him. I don't think about him anymore. He told Kim that. But when he gets a chance, he kicks his brother when he's down.
Yeah.
And as much as it is, you know, satisfying to see Chuck have another setback, I do think that this is an important step. You know, it's him, you know, learning more about his showbiz powers here, you know, and doing more manipulation. But also, like, he is doing it for... He's doing it purely for revenge. There's no material gain.
No,
out of doing it.
Yeah. It's undeniably, like, it's like the worst thing he's done so far.
Yeah.
Other than roping Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a vengeance quest with no upside mm-hmm. against somebody who is definitively not a good person. Rebecca's an innocent.
Mm-hmm.
This is bad, though. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying this is good behavior.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting, I think the thing that makes the show, one of the things that makes the show so interesting is that she is going, this is a thing that is going to expose Chuck's deeper flaws.
Yes.
Like the setback. Like, I'm not saying that's good, that it was justice that he did this or anything.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm not like indicting him because you are failing to or whatever. I am more belaboring the point just because I do think that it is an important step. This is not the moment he becomes Saul Goodman.
No.
Right.
No.
But like it is a line being crossed. Yeah.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a thing that comes out of having a bad time and paying it forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of bad things are happening right now. He cannot process this energy, this anger and guilt and sadness. It has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
That's just human nature. It sucks. Not saying it's our job to do better in terms mm-hmm. of where we put it.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a failure on that account.
Yeah. You can, like, you can see what inputs led to this output. Right.
100%.
Yeah.
What should people do if they like the show? What output should that lead from? What if the show inputted?
If you liked this input, your output can be to go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, kick us a few bucks a month. It helps us continue to do these shows. That is how we keep our houses hot, and we greatly appreciate anybody who is already supporting us.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. You can also leave us ratings and reviews. You can talk about us on message boards. You can discuss the show and other shows on the Reddit. Mm-hmm. Love to hear what you feel about the causality link between there. I think it probably is just a vague general concern for people around and remembering yeah. that Hector is around. But if there's something that we didn't think of, let me know.
Yeah.
I'd be curious. I'd also be curious how it hit for folk listening too.
Yeah.
You can join us in thanking our producer, Gwen. Thanks to Gwen. And we will see you next week with a really fun repeating gif of Bob Odenkirk injuring his back.